This is a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast. You're listening to the UAE's number one talk radio station.
This is Afternoons on Dubai Eye 103.8.
Farmer, great to have you with us. It was a gloomy day in Dubai, but lots to talk about on today's episode. We had osteopath Anisha Joshi. She was on hand talking about how pain can differ depending on what you eat, how you sleep, and of course on hand to help with any aches and pains as well. Our resident motorhead Damien Reed was on hand unpacking what and how to drive on the rainy, rainy roads of Dubai. How do electric vehicles fare under these conditions as well? Plus, it was Steve Cronin from Dead Simple Saving. He was unpacking why you probably don't need a financial advisor, and if you do, some of the red flags to make sure you find the right one. Dr. Thraya, clinical psychologist, really loves talking about psychopaths. And my goodness, so did you. We were talking about how to spot one, how to work with one, and even how to treat one. Goodness me, what a day. And we're talking about what you're talking about, this absolutely wild weather and some really, really dangerous roads. So if you are out there listening to us from your car, please, please, please stay safe. Oh, gosh. Well, who else could we speak to about being on four wheels in the rain but Damien Reed, Dubai Eye's very own motoring expert and car reviewer extraordinaire. And I understand you've had a bit of a hairy morning yourself, Damo. What's been going on?
Yes, in fact, yeah, I just flew back this morning and I was looking at the weather now. I'm lucky I made it back. I was in Germany yesterday for the launch of a new Audi, and We were in a holding pattern for a while this morning. We landed in between some pretty vicious storm cells, so I was very, very lucky, but then caught up in the traffic on the way home, and then bunkered down here back at home and just watching this storm cell come through now. I've lived here for 20 years, Helen. I've never seen anything like what I just saw in the last 5 minutes.
I know. It's pitch black. Normally I can look out my studio window and see the Burj Khalifa, the Burj Al Arab, and all I can see now is darkness, a bit of a palm tree waving around, and thankfully not many cars on the road. And when I spoke to you earlier, I was just about to drive into work myself, and my goodness, some really, really understandably panicked people who found themselves and their vehicles into very, very dangerous situations. So we are going to talk a little bit about driving technique, and that's not for this afternoon because I really urge you to get off the roads and do not put yourself in that situation in the first place. But certainly over the next few days where there will be water on the roads, you might need to be heading out for some essentials. Can I ask you, in your 20 years of driving in Dubai, Damien, what is the most ridiculous misconception you've heard about driving in the rain? And can we set the record straight today?
Not sure about misconception, but the most ridiculous, the most stupid thing I've ever seen on the roads, and I saw it in abundance this morning, is people driving on the roads with their hazard lights on. And it is honestly, it is arguably the most dangerous thing you can do in these conditions. And there should be fines, there should be demerit points for people to do this. It is absolutely inexcusable, because you know you've when you're driving in conditions like this with heavy fog and rain and everything else, you lose perspective of distance. Hazard lights are there for when your car is stranded, when you're maybe the car's flooded in a puddle, maybe it's broken down on the side of the road. So it's to indicate that the car is stationary in a dangerous position. But when you've got a situation, I was coming down the Al Khaila Road and you've got, you know, six lanes wide of traffic with their hazard lights on, all doing about 80, 90 kilometres per hour. Now, one of those might not be moving, but you don't know because you can't judge the distance, and therefore you're going to have a 90-kilometre impact into the back of the car, which is it's fatal. You know, no other way to put it. So it just winds me up to see people driving with their hazard lights on because it's raining.
Guys, stop it! Just stop it. Damien Reed's key message for you this afternoon. I wanted to ask you about something I've been hearing kind of conflicting information about, which was electric cars are great in the rain. Electric cars are a nightmare in the rain. And I'm wondering, you've driven a fair few in your time. Would you want to be behind the wheel of one today?
I have no problem. I have no problem with being in an electric vehicle today. I mean, you know, they are as safe as any other combustion engine vehicle out there on the road. In fact, you're probably going to have a better chance of getting through some of these flooded areas in an EV than you are in a combustion engine car because, okay, firstly, they're heavier, so they're going to plow through the water probably a little easier, not sort of, you know, float away in heavy water. But also, too, electric vehicles, like any car, you're not going to get electrocuted inside the car because you're earthed by the four rubber tires on the ground. So it's a bit like the myth about if a lightning bolt hits the car, then, you know, you're going to be electrocuted. You're not. Or a fallen power line lands on a car. You're not, because it's the four rubber tires that earth you to the ground. So, you know, that rules that one out. But also, too, an electric vehicle, you're not going to have situations where it's going to get flooded by driving through heavy waters and stall. Because that's a result of water going into a combustion engine and causing the engine to stall. You don't have that with an EV. So if anything, I think you're probably better off with an EV trying to go through these heavy waters than in a combustion car.
There you go. Damien Reid speaks up next. In an ideal world, what would you be driving on a rainy day like today? We'll be getting his number one pick. Plus aquaplaning. It sounds like something from a sci-fi movie. We're going to be getting the lowdown and maybe some ninja moves on how to deal with it. Back to the roads now. Damien Reid is with us live on the line. He's looking all cosy at home while I'm at work thinking, gosh, how am I going to get home tonight? Damien, which is my question to you. Here are my options for getting home tonight. I've got my Volkswagen Terramont outside and I've got my husband primed to come and pick me up in an FJ Cruiser if we need to. What would your money be on?
Okay, here's the thing. In this situation, I am 100% behind the biggest, tallest SUV you can find. And I often look at a weather situation like this, and when it does blow up like this, I think, yeah, I want to be in the car with the greatest amount of ground clearance I can get that will get me through. So the FJ Cruiser, not a bad option for this afternoon, that's for sure.
And he's got the lift kit. I thought he was being ridiculous. But now I'm grateful for the extra spend. All right, Mr. Farmer, get ready to pick me up. Message here saying, driving now in my Ford F-150 Raptor, never felt safer or better. Message from Rich in Abu Dhabi saying, plenty of idiots driving dangerously, slowly in inappropriate lanes, the left-hand ones just begging to be re-ended. And people saying, got to get a boat. Can I ask you then, you said before about the weight of an electric vehicle actually maybe being on your side and talking there about, you know, about clearance. In an ideal world, I mean, we've had a message here saying the Ford F-150, what car do you think will be faring best on Dubai roads this afternoon, Damien?
Well, you know, a heavy car with a lot of ground clearance to get over, you know, to get through the flooded waters. Also, a heavier car will help cut through the water, so it reduces the chance of aquaplaning. And that's aquaplaning is when water gets between the tire and the road, and you lose all steering and all braking. You do not want to be in a situation in aquaplaning. That's where you see incidents where even the best driver in the world has no control over their vehicles. So, you know, the heavier vehicle does helps you in that regard. And there isn't an EV, I think, available under 2 ton, even the small ones. So that will help you in that situation.
What would you like? We can name a brand. We can have a little favourite for a rainy day. Which driver should be feeling a bit smug about their purchases this afternoon?
Well, yeah, the F-150 driver that texted him is looking pretty good, and I imagine he's got the big balloony tires that will cut through the water as well. So that I would not want to be in a low riding sports car. Definitely no Ferraris out on the roads today or anything like that, because again, with their high performance tires, they're one step away from aquaplaning at any given time. So, you know, low-riding sports cars definitely off the list. High-riding SUVs with big, chunky, treaded tyres is the way to get you through this afternoon if you have to be on the road. And I've got to say, too, this morning on the road, hats off to all the professional drivers who have to be on the road today, the couriers, the first responders, my Emirates driver, everyone out there. You guys are absolute superstars by putting up with this today.
And not to state the absolute obvious, but I will be Captain Obvious. Please, please, please think about delivery drivers, about ordering your dinner in tonight. No. It's time to raid the freezer, raid the cupboards, and really think about the community around us this afternoon and into the evening. Damien, when people are getting back on the road, maybe tomorrow, depending on what's happening with the weather, what be your, apart from not having your hazards on, what would be your number one bit of advice for driving in wet weather?
Well, I guess the first thing that you can do straight away without leaving your home is to keep the radio on and listen to the weather reports and take evasive action and avoid roads that are flooded. I've just seen cars driving up the wrong way, up one-way slip roads off Shakeside Road, because they've realised that the junction is flooded. So, you know, they're turning around going the other way and there's an accident waiting to happen. Mm-hmm. So, you know, listen to what's going on. If you are out in the roads, look ahead, try and read the traffic as best you can. If you see a lot of brake lights coming on, take the preemptive measure and start to stop a little bit earlier. Just slow down. Be so extra vigilant when you're out there. We are so complacent about driving cars, but really the job at hand, you've got to treat this seriously because lives are at stake. And if you see a lot of cars suddenly merging to the right or the left, 10 cars ahead, take the action to start to do that. That means that there must be water up ahead or a broken down car, but don't follow the lights of the car directly in front of you. Try to preempt it as much as you can, and that will stop nose-to-tail accidents further down.
Thank you so much, Damien. Really, really appreciate your wisdom, your insights this afternoon. So you reckon I should get Nick Farmer to come and pick me up in the FJ come 5 o'clock today?
You won't like to hear it, but I'm on your side, Helen. Bring Nick down in the FJ.
Yeah, I can pick you up. I can be a little princess passenger on the way home. Damien Reid, really appreciate it. You can, of course, catch him on Motor Mania here on Dubai Eye 103.8. She was supposed to be in the studio for a hug and maybe a bit of back cracking as well, but we're keeping her safe because she's too valuable. We've got Anisha Jossi with us today, aka Osteo Anisha. She practices between here and the UK, a regular on UK TV, and when she is in the UAE, she can be found at Hortman Clinic. How are you in all senses? How are you, Anisha?
I'm good, thanks. How are you?
I'm all right. I mean, I feel like it's 10 o'clock at night, so it feels a bit peculiar. And I wish you were here. But apart from that, I am well and safe and I've had a bowl of soup for lunch. So, you know, tick, tick, tick. I've got loads of questions for you. I've already had a few on social media. People can get in touch as ever on 4001 on the ARN Play app and the WhatsApp too. We're having a health clinic on all things osteopathy between now and 3 o'clock. So what do you think listeners are going to get from this next hour, Anisha? Why should people keep us in their ears between now and 3 o'clock?
Well, I would say that I think lots of people are experiencing pain and discomfort at the moment. It's become really clear with hybrid working and the amount of stress actually that people are experiencing, that it's impacting their back and their joints. And we also live in a really healthy society as well, especially in Dubai. I've noticed that. So having all of that combined, I've had a lot of people in clinic experiencing pain and discomfort. So I think that the next hour will be really useful because I plan on giving lots of hacks and lots of easy tips for people to take away.
Fantastic. I was going to say what's keeping you busy, but I think you've kind of answered that, to be honest. Do you notice a bit of a difference between the problems or the people coming into clinic in the UK versus the UAE?
I mean, I was about to say that the weather is better here.
Not today.
I almost feel like I brought it with me, so I'm sorry, guys.
Don't blame it on the weatherman. Blame it on Anisha.
Yeah, blame it on me. I think the difference is that obviously out here you're able to work out outside a lot, and that can be amazing for you, but also it can lead to different types of experiences when it comes to injury. Mm-hmm. So for instance, running on the beach or things like that might increase the chances of someone experiencing ankle pain or something like that in comparison to the UK, where they definitely don't have a beach to run on at any time ever.
Yeah, it's an interesting point. Also, I think about, well, actually, we do have more sun exposure, but still shockingly low in vitamin D. A lot of the population having vitamin D deficiencies, but that can help with things like bone health and our immune system and how we heal and, you know, even our mood. But yeah, I think seasonal affective disorder is not something we've touched on much on the show, apart from maybe today. So let's talk a little bit about pain, because I think it's a really interesting thing because it is so, so subjective. And one of the most frustrating diagnoses I think that anyone can get is this unspecified lower back pain. And I'm sure you get a lot of people who have come to you saying, I've been in agony for weeks, if not months now. My doctor's just said it's lower back pain. I don't really know what to do about it. You mentioned before about hybrid working. Have you seen a bit of an increase in this back pain issue specifically?
I would definitely say that there's been an increase. And I know what you mean in terms of like the frustration of being diagnosed with unspecific lower back pain. But the reality is that it is actually a thing. So it's kind of all connected. So you've got stress, nutrition, sleep. And I do think that the hybrid working model impacts all those things. And consequently, more people are going to be experiencing pain and discomfort.
Mm-hmm. Well, next, we're going to talk about things that can increase your ability to feel pain. Stress, for example, which we touched on yesterday in terms of stress management, but what we didn't really talk about what happens in the body. Plus, sleep and lower back pain, and even the foods that can be shown to reduce your pain too. I've had a question from Ali asking about treatments for sciatica. Hasn't been able to work or walk for about 3 months. Pretty sure it's a trapped nerve under the piriformis muscle. Is this something that she could help with? We've also had a message here saying, I've basically got a trap that would make a bodybuilder jealous. Awful tension in neck and traps after a bad car accident. Was trying to see an osteo regularly, but I can't afford to anymore. Would a massage gun help? Any advice there? And I do urge you to go and give Osteo Anisha a follow on Instagram. Afternoons with me, Helen Farmer. We have got osteopath Anisha Joshi with us through until 3 o'clock today. And she's a practice between here and the UK. Can we talk about pain? Because it can be so subjective. We can feel it differently on different days ourselves, never mind the differences between different people. What are some of the things that you've seen in clinic and practice and research that can perhaps exaggerate or make us feel pain more keenly, Anisha?
So I would say that there's four clear areas that will impact the way in which your brain processes pain. So, and that's all down to do with cortisol, which is the hormone that's released that also increases inflammation within our body. So the things that increase cortisol are things like stress, which quite frankly we all are, poor sleep, and even the foods that we eat can be hugely important and also increase the inflammation that's within our body. So all of that combined, you can actually, by making small adjustments in those areas of your life, evidence has shown that you can change the way in which your body perceives pain and causes pain within your body.
Well, can we go back to sleep, which, you know, I love talking about sleep. I love sleeping. There's evidence behind sleep or lack of sleep and lower back pain in particular. Why might that be?
So, I mean, I get asked all the time, what's the best way to sleep? What's the best position to sleep in? And there's lots of conflicting evidence. There's not enough evidence out there. But ultimately, yes, there are some positions that you can sleep in that might put a little bit more added pressure on certain parts of your spine, like your neck or your lower back. But the reality is that what they found is that sleep actually has more impact on your lower back than your lower back does sleep. Mm-hmm. So quite often people feel stuck in this vicious cycle of I can't sleep because I'm in pain, and then I'm in pain because I can't sleep. And really, the most important thing is that you get sleep. So it doesn't matter what position you're sleeping in. You just need to do whatever it takes to get the sleep, because that is actually going to cause more pain than the other way around, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. I think also when we're tired, we feel everything more keenly. I feel like our emotions are closer to the surface. You know, we're more irritable, you know, and so if we are feeling more pain, if we're overtired, it all kind of feeds in. I think we're only now in the last kind of 5 years thinking about this whole body approach about mental health and sleep and physical health and food, you know, this being this whole body approach. Let's get the text line. As I said, I've got lots of questions for you, but I can squeeze one in before a bit of Ronan Keating. A message here from Ali saying, any alternative treatments for sciatica? Been in horrible pain, been able to work or walk properly for 3 months, been to a doctor, I'm pretty sure it's a trapped nerve under the piriformis muscle. Sick of painkillers and I don't want to take anything else anymore. Thank you. Sciatica, would you mind giving us a kind of a top level explanation of what that is and perhaps some advice to Ali in particular relating to his message?
Sure. So the sciatic nerve is a nerve that runs through your lower back. It's based in the lower part of your spine and runs down the back of your leg. So symptoms typically include a sharp shooting pain down one side. And again, down the back of your leg mainly, but it can be in different parts of the leg as well. What this does is it can create weakness, instability, and a lack of range of motion. So for Ali in particular, what I'd suggest is, I mean, 3 months is a really long time. Mm-hmm. So it would be about, it sounds like from what he said that he's tried quite a lot. So it could be that there's a muscle imbalance in his lower back or his glutes. And quite often people think that you have to stretch the piriformis muscle in order to help a sciatic problem, but quite often you need to strengthen it. So it might be worth going to a gym or seeing a professional to sort of see where there is imbalance mm-hmm. in the body. And that could potentially support him. There's also something called nerve flossing, which is highly effective. And you can look up this stuff for beginners on YouTube. And yeah, it's really, really useful for when someone's got sciatica and they need to release the nerve slowly.
Nerve so that might help as well. Flossing. There you go. Every day's a school day. Hope that helps, Ali. It's interesting because it feels counterproductive or counterintuitive, rather, to be moving more when you're in pain. But as you said, going to a rehab specialist, looking at, you know, building muscle rather than perhaps resting muscle could be really beneficial. Ali, if you want Nisha's details, just send me a thumbs up and I will send you her Instagram and find out how to book. How long are you in town for? I'm just anticipating any questions coming in the text line, Nisha.
I have a few slots. I'm here till Saturday.
Till Saturday. All right, brilliant. Nisha Joshi with us today, osteopath to the stars. She's here in Dubai until the end of the week, but we've stolen away from clinic for an hour here. Anisha Joshi is on the line, aka Osteo Anisha. She practices between here and the UK and is in the UAE until the end of the week. But we've stolen her away from a very, very busy osteo clinic to answer my questions, but most importantly, yours. So if you do have any, drop us a line. You're going to have to be quick. I wanted to ask you about supplementation because my bedside table and indeed counter space in the bathroom is covered in little plastic pots and pills. When it comes to supplements to help with muscle and joint health in particular, Anisha, what should be in our shopping cart?
That's really interesting that you say that. Do you know, there's so much out there where people say you should take this and this and this. And then people always say to me, I just don't know where to begin. Because they don't know where to begin, they just don't buy anything. Mm-hmm. But when it comes to research and looking at what actually works, the top, I'd say, three supplements that would help your muscle joint back pain is omega-3. So that's your sort of oily fishes, salmon. And if you're sort of vegan, you can supplement that with flaxseed oil. Now, omega-3 is amazing. So every single cell in our body is wrapped in omega-3. So that's why when you take it, it's great for your skin, your hair, and consequently, obviously, your joints and your muscles as well. You then have turmeric. Curcumin is the active ingredient within turmeric. And it's been proven to really help with things like degenerative changes as the natural aging process occurs, as well as reduce inflammation generally within the body. So you can add that to your cooking, to your recipes, or take it in supplement form if you want. And then, of course, you mentioned earlier vitamin D. So vitamin D is a big one. And funnily enough, you mentioned that a lot of us are vitamin D deficient.
Hugely, and embarrassingly so here in the UAE. I feel like if we all had a little blood work done this week, the vast majority of listeners right now would go, yeah, it's true. Could do with a jab, yeah. Could do with a supplement.
Yeah, I mean, I literally, last time I was here, I had a blood test at Hortman Clinics and I was shocked because I had been in the sun. I just had a day off and been in the sun like the whole day, obviously being from the UK, obviously wore protective layers, SPF, but, you know, I'd been in the sun all day and I was like, oh, I reckon I'll be fine. And I was still massively vitamin D deficient after having an entire day in the sun.
Didn't do what it needed to do. What impact does vitamin D have then on muscle and joint pain?
So it's just actually been proven from an evidence-based perspective to really benefit people who are experiencing pain and discomfort, whether that's lower back pain, joint pain, arthritis. It's one of the supplements that has the yield the best result.
Interesting.
When researched.
BB's been in touch saying, what about magnesium? Ah, see, I take that as well, obviously. But magnesium's great for, you know, restless legs, deep relaxation. But interestingly, and I was just listening to a podcast last night about this, it can be better to bathe in magnesium rather than take it as a supplement. We can absorb it really, really well through our skin. So having a bath with magnesium flakes, you know, using an oil or a spray. What about magnesium from your point of view as an osteopath? Can that be beneficial for relaxation of muscles rather than pain as such?
I would say actually that, you know, magnesium has probably more impact on things like your sleep. Mm-hmm. And then obviously if you're putting it in a bath and things like that, I guess there's a bit of an argument to say kind of like, well, then you're relaxing. So then you're reducing your stress levels, which in turn will reduce your cortisol levels, which will in turn reduce the amount of inflammation that you're experiencing within your body. So there's mixed reviews, if I'm honest, in terms of how magnesium would directly impact pain. It's more likely to help you generally with sleep and relaxing, like you said, which in turn is going to help everything anyway.
Yeah, because, which like we're here
said,
for.
Sleep is life.
Absolutely. You know? more sleep, less problems. You also mentioned food in terms of reducing pain. And you touched on kind of this idea of foods that can cause or indeed reduce inflammation in the body. Would you mind giving us a couple of examples? And I know you're going to say sugar, and then I'm going to really want to turn off your microphone as one to be avoided. But in terms of foods that can help you with pain, does anything come to mind, Anisha?
Yes, so I touched on obviously turmeric, ginger, really, really good to sort of add to your food. Eating oily fish, if you can, flaxseed oil, olive oil, so healthy sort of saturated fats, avocados, greeny leafy vegetables, spinach, broccoli. The reality is we all know the foods that we shouldn't really be eating and the foods that we should be eating. So it is literally about that and having, you know, we all need a scoop of ice cream. It's okay, Helen. Like, we've all been there, you know.
But yeah, been there, always there. There every day. It's not a once a month thing. It's not a once a month thing. Right, we are going to go to the tech line in just a few minutes. Anisha Joshi with us today. Nisha Joshi with us today, osteopath extraordinaire. She's here in the UAE until the end of the week, practicing out of Hortman Clinic. So if you do want to reach out, you can just send me the word osteo or Anisha or whatever you like on 4001. I'll send you the details so you can get one of what sounds like very few appointments that are left. She's very, very busy indeed, and we've stolen her away. No wonder we've had a number of messages asking for her advice. Daisy's been in touch saying, I have awful tension in my neck and traps. It started after a car accident over a decade ago, but is definitely worsened by stress and lifestyle. I get migraines and general headaches. I used to see an osteo regularly, which really helped, but I can't afford that anymore since it's not an insurance. Things are getting worse. I do the basic stretches. I've got a tennis ball, use my neck, but the muscles are a solid mass. Honestly, she says, my traps would make a bodybuilder jealous. Would a massage gun help? The constant aching, pain and headaches is really, really getting me down. What comes to mind there, Nisha? How can we help out Daisy?
Yeah, that's really, really tough. I would say that a massage gun can be helpful to sort of feel like you're getting some pain relief. But also I think it's important to also think about things like relaxing yourself, and actually a bit of mindfulness and things like that can actually impact pain and discomfort, especially as you've said, stress seems to make it worse. So even just 5 minutes of breathing in the morning can start to reduce your pain levels and the way your brain perceives it. And that might start to relax the muscles on its own.
I would also say some of these massage guns are really, really powerful. Really powerful. Mm. And I would imagine in the wrong hands or in the wrong spot, you know, is it possible they could do a bit of damage?
I to be honest, I think that, yeah, some of them could, you know, people get massage gun heavy, you know, and understandably, sometimes you're in so much pain, you just, you know, you just kind of want to get it out. But yeah, if you sort of do it for too long, it can actually cause too much inflammation into the area and make something worse.
Mm-hmm. We've run out of time. We haven't run out of questions. So I'm going to send everyone who's messaged me with a question your Instagram account, if that's okay with you. And of course, if anyone does want Anisha Joshi's details, you can send me the word osteo to 4001 to the app. You can use the WhatsApp, which is 0487155000. She's an absolute superstar. No nonsense. And really, really appreciate your time. I was going to say go and enjoy your afternoon, but I suspect it's probably going to be a quick cup of coffee and on to the next patient. Anisha, thank you so much for your time. Thank you.
Thank you so much for having me.
Always a pleasure.
This is Money Matters with National Bonds. Save, invest, prosper.
So delighted to welcome, not to the studio because of the adverse weather conditions, but to the teams. We've got Steve Cronin from Dead Simple Saving with us this afternoon, and we're talking about why, with the greatest respect, your finances are probably not so complicated that you need an expert. We're talking about the pros and cons of advisors. Steve, would you mind telling us briefly what your mission is with Dead Simple Saving? And that is with the workshops, but also, of course, with the platform as well.
Yep, I'd like to emphasize that I do not own a Rolls Royce. That's important to start with. And my mission started like many expats. I very, very nearly got caught in a horrible long-term savings plan through some advisor who is a very nice chap. And I thought, alas, this is what I should be doing, handing over my money to someone who seems very sensible. And then my friend warned me, be careful. I lost lots of money in one of these plans. And my eyes opened and I realized that I needed to take ownership of my own personal finances. And looking through and starting to understand what these products were like, I started thinking, wow, actually, a lot of people don't know about this and they need help as well. Mm-hmm. So as I was helping myself, I got more and more passionate about helping others. And I really believe that you can manage your own personal finances by yourself, planning, saving and investing, if someone just shows you how. So do you need an expert? Well, you might need someone to just open the door and help you learn the foundations and learn what you need to do. But once you know those things, I'm a great believer that the vast majority of personal finance and investing, you do not need an expert until things get very, very complicated.
I couldn't agree more. I do think, though, there's an awful lot of gatekeeping of information, of jargon, of overcomplication. And I wondered what maybe obstacles or barriers or attitudes you've come up against over the years where people are going, I just don't really want to do it myself. I'd rather that, you know, he or she's been doing it for years. Why can't they do it? What do you think is stopping people from really grabbing the knowledge and empowering themselves to DIY it, Steve?
I think the industry somewhat preys on people's fears. Like, we all worry about making a mistake and making big financial mistakes. And we inherit that from our parents and our grandparents. Lots of people come to me and say, my parents are so against stock investing because my dad invested, you know, in the Australian stock market in the 70s and lost all his money or whatever it might be. That was just this week's example.
Oh, gosh.
And so you're busy. You may think you're not good with numbers, all of these things. You may leave it to your other half if you have one. And so all these excuses not to take ownership of your finances means that you just don't. And you're in then quite a vulnerable position because other people can take advantage of you. And they may really take advantage of you and scam you, or they may just do a kind of long-term leeching of your finances where they just put you into a very complicated high fee product where they are taking 1, 2, 3, 4% of your money every year. And that may not sound like a lot of money, but if in the stock market, for example, you can expect a long-term average of 7% growth, well, taking 3 or 4% fees, 4% fees out of the 7%, that's 58% of your money going in fees. Your money's not going to be growing the way it should be.
Steve Cronin, can I ask you some of the red flags to look out for when someone's selling themselves, selling their services? What are the phrases, the promises that you need to be really, really attuned to? Because, you know, you might want someone to handle things. There might be someone who might have specific expertise in an area that you need. But how do you sort for the wheat from the chaff? So I guess I'm really asking is, how do you find the good ones, and what are the major, major red flags?
So the very first red flag, I think, is what kind of profit or growth are they offering you with this investment? Because there are a lot of scams out there, and we see adverts all over the place, surprisingly, for products that are most likely scams, and that's quite depressing. So anybody who is offering you more than 10% a year profit, I would be very, very careful about that, because return is intimately connected with risk. And if it's high return, like over 10%, it's probably high risk. Mm-hmm. So I would run away from anything that is offering 10%, more than 10% a year. And if they're offering you 10% a month, like some scams, then I would definitely run away and probably report them. Secondly, anyone who's cold calling you and phoning you up, offering you investment products or advice, I'd probably run away from them as well. The next thing is, are they qualified? Do they know what they're talking about? And that's a kind of minimum, because actually there's a lot of people who are well qualified and who are very nice, but are working for companies that really pressure them to sell products to you, and who are and who may want to get high commission out of you. Mm-hmm. So that's the next thing to ask is, like, what are they getting out of selling me this product? What sort of commission are they getting? What are the fees? Always ask about the fees and the commission. I would also add, if they're working for a bank or an insurer, their interests are probably not aligned with you, yours, when it comes to investing.
Yeah. How banks truly are great independent are they as well?
Yeah, great. Banks are great, great, great for deposits and mortgages and things like that. Insurers are fantastic for health insurance, term life insurance, things like that. But when it comes to investments, you probably want to speak to an investment specialist. But again, check everything. You trust but verify. Check what they are putting you into. Is there some kind of surrender penalty? Are you going to be trapped in there for many years? Again, not a good thing. Is it complicated? Could you explain it to your grandmother? The best products are very, very simple.
Steve Cronin with us today from Dead Simple Saving. Had a message here saying, any advice or who to turn to for inheritance tax advice for UK expats and also pensions? I'm sure Steve's got some people in his Rolodex that he can put you in touch with or indeed help you educate yourself. We'll come to that as well. And also going to talk about the circumstances where indeed you might need some kind of financial advice. But what are some of those criteria? And as we said, the do's and don'ts, that's coming your way.
This is Money Matters with National Bonds. Save, invest, prosper.
Delighted to welcome back to the show Steve Cronin of Dead Simple Saving. We're looking at why and when you might need a financial advisor. His platform and indeed workshops truly empower you with the knowledge to do it yourself, from understanding the jargon to taking back the power and removing the fees in the process. But I wanted to ask you about how to find the right expert, and of course, maybe some of the questions you should be asking them before you sign anything and move forward. What comes to mind, Steve?
I think it's a really great idea, as you say, to understand enough about that area to ask the right questions. And in fact, that's something that I help people with. I think there are some areas where you really do need an expert. So when it comes to large amounts of money, we're talking definitely millions, maybe six figures, or when we're talking about legal issues, then you clearly need an expert. So we're talking about wills, guardianships, tax situations when you're moving back home. In those situations, I would seek an expert. If you're looking for a will in the UAE, then obviously get someone based in the UAE. I think when it comes to tax, quite often I recommend speaking to someone in your home country who has expertise with expats, because I think sometimes they are less biased than someone who might be over here. Try and find an expert who is independent of any products that they might try to push on you. So anyone who works for a company where there's incentives to sell things and cross-sell things, you're not necessarily going to get the right kind of advice. That's where you have to be a bit careful.
Steve Cronin, thank you so, so much. We've only got about 30 seconds left, which begs the question, what are you working on right now? How can people take that advice about educating themselves and, I guess, leveling up their own financial literacy?
Yes, you can absolutely learn how to plan, save and invest by yourself. What I recommend for all of these areas where you might need an expert or you can do it yourself, look for financial independence. Google financial independence Dubai, financial independence UK. Look for Facebook groups of a similar name. You will get good recommendations there and a wealth of information from people who are really passionate about financial information. Loads of free stuff on my website, deadsimplesaving.com. And I welcome people to just come and have a peruse. And because I'm really passionate about helping people take control of this stuff. You absolutely can do this by yourself and learn with a bit of dedication. Even if you're horrible with numbers, you'll be okay.
Such wise words. Steve Cronin, thank you so, so much. I'll make it even easier. If you want to send me the word save to 4001, I will send you the website for Dead Simple Saving. As we talked about, some dates there, some great resources, and an absolute pleasure as ever to catch up. Stay warm, stay safe, Steve, and we'll talk very, very soon. Now, though, we are diving deep into the intriguing world of psychopathy. We're talking psychos, exploring prevalence, traits, what it really means to be a psychopath. And joining us for this conversation is someone who loves talking about it, Dr. Thuraya from the Human Relations Institute and Clinic, renowned clinical psychologist. So get ready to unravel the mysteries of the mind and get some valuable insights, too. If you've got any questions, of course, you can be anonymous. Reach out 4001 on the app or the WhatsApp. How are you, Dr. Thryan? I'm not sure I've ever meant that more ever. How are you?
I'm actually struggling to get home right now because of the fact that I have been stuck at the office for the past 2 hours because of the rain, but thankfully I've been saved by a driver who actually agreed to take me home. Oh. So I'm actually in the car on the way home.
Good. Not all superheroes wear capes. So yeah, huge shout out to drivers, to everyone who's out there, you know, the emergency response workers. It's been a very, very busy and challenging day. Dr. Thuraya, I guess I really want to ask you is, why do you like talking about psychopaths so much?
Well, I think the reason why I like to talk about psychopaths is because I like to educate people about what it actually is. See, psychopathy is not actually an official diagnosis. So this is something that people don't usually understand. And people get very interested about psychopathy by watching like serial killers and things like that. But when you don't really understand it, the words can be misused quite a bit. And so the official diagnosis for something that's very similar to psychopathy is antisocial personality disorder, which is essentially the lesser form. So the more extreme form of meeting a lot of different criteria would be what people refer to as psychopathy. Mm-hmm. But the antisocial personality disorder pretty much has similar characteristics, which is, you know, general kind of disregard for others and societal norms, tendency to lie and manipulate, having that type of aggressiveness or impulsiveness, not really expressing much remorse or empathy towards others, having very shallow affect. So emotions are kind of really superficial. And if anything, they're more mirrored than felt.
Interesting.
And you'll notice that they don't really take much responsibility for their behaviors or for anything that's going on in their life.
Interesting. Well, we've got a few questions for you, but I want to play this. This is from a self-proclaimed psychopath, Vic. She was diagnosed with exactly what you've been talking about, antisocial personality disorder, when she was 19 years old. In recent months, she's been sharing her very unique worldview on TikTok to a rapidly growing audience to help destigmatize this disorder. Here is Vic, who goes on TikTok as Vic the Path.
Here are three more ways to tell if your friends with a psychopath coming from a diagnosed psychopath. It's said that psychopaths make up 1 to 4% of the population. So at the low end of that, 1 in 100 people. And at the high end of that, 1 in 25 people. So it's very likely that you have a psychopath in your life or you've crossed paths with a psychopath before. The first sign is if you know someone that's a pathological liar. Lying is part of the diagnostic criteria for psychopathy, and psychopaths are known for being not only frequent liars, but skilled liars. Not all psychopaths are pathological liars, and not all pathological liars are psychopaths, but there's a lot of crossover between the two. So if you have a friend that likes to lie a lot for no reason or for manipulative reasons, then you might be friends with a psychopath. Number two, they're very calm in stressful situations. Psychopaths tend not to feel anxiety and they work very well under pressure. So if you have a friend that doesn't get easily riled up, is able to stay calm in high stress situations, and is able to have a firm grasp on things that would send other people into a spiral, then they might be a psychopath. And the last sign on this list is if you have a friend that's a very bad influence. This is the friend that's always doing something dangerous and is always egging other people on to do dangerous things. They're not afraid to make poor decisions and they find it funny to get other people to make the poor decisions with them. They don't really seem to have a concern for their own safety or the safety of others. So a lot of times you're on edge when you're around them because you don't know what kind of crazy thing they're going to get into and what kind of crazy things they're going to get other people into. Psychopaths lack fear and they tend to be adrenaline junkies. So they'll put themselves and others in danger just for their own enjoyment.
Vic the Path, self-proclaimed psychopath, speaking out there on TikTok. Dr. Thryer, clinical psychologist, what's your take on that?
Well, I mean, it's interesting that, I mean, I don't know how accurate I would find somebody on TikTok self-proclaiming that they are either diagnosed or are a psychopath. But what I would kind of say is that I think the statistics that she had mentioned are quite inflammatory. I mean, a lot of the statistics that are done are usually done amongst criminal populations or are usually done in incarceration settings. So those numbers can be quite inflammatory. The reality is that we're looking anywhere between, you know, 1.2% of the population, but that could go as low as 0.3% of the population. And that's usually done in areas like the US and the UK. But more often than not, what we're finding is that psychopathy tends to be lower in other areas of the world than in the US and the UK and in Canada. So the reason for that is because of the levels of incarceration that they have, but also because of the genetic factor to it. So psychopathy or the antisocial personality disorder does have a genetic component as well as a brain makeup component, because the amygdala, which is really an important emotional processing area in the brain, actually smaller in psychopaths than in other individuals. And that really ties and connects to the fact that they do not have the empathy level, if empathy at all, that other individuals who have that part of the brain in a quote unquote normal way actually do.
That's fascinating. What about men versus women in terms of prevalence there between genders?
So it's really interesting that you asked that question, because although men tend to be caught more as psychopaths, but women are just really better at lying and manipulating in a way where they don't seem to be as psychopathic or as antisocial personality. So you'll notice that a lot of women tend to get away with, well, to get away with murder. Exactly. Than men do, because of their skill set at lying and manipulating.
Wow.
So actually, psychopaths or antisocial personality disorder females tend to be much better at hiding it than men because of their impulsivity and aggressivity.
Oh, Dr. Thurai with us today. We are talking psychopaths, how to spot them. We are live until five. Dr. Thurai with us, clinical psychologist, and we're talking about psychopaths in society. We're just talking there about there being a genetic component about men versus women, how men get caught more, but there might be more female psychopaths than we might realise. I wanted to ask you about the terminology, because it is a term, it's a descriptor that often makes headlines. But when does psychopathy become dangerous? You know, are all psychopaths prone to violent behavior, or is that a bit of a misconception?
That's a very big misconception, because the reality is that actually not all psychopaths become killers. So really, when you think about it, we have psychopaths in some of the professions that we cannot even imagine. So the top three professions for psychopaths are CEO, lawyer, and surgeons. And you would be very surprised. A lot of people don't even understand, like, wouldn't even fathom that. Like, what? A surgeon helps save lives. Doesn't that go against psychopathy altogether? Well, no, not really, because when you think about it, a surgeon has to kind of almost play, quote unquote, you know, this higher power of protection, right? And to like save lives. So there is that sense of like grandiosity that's there, and that tendency for them to kind of be impulsive in their decision making, but quick on their feet, and not necessarily think of, oh my God, this person's going to die. So that lack of remorse and lack of empathy can be very beneficial for a surgeon. Again, not all surgeons are psychopaths, but what I'm trying to say is that their traits can be very beneficial in many different professions, like salesperson as well is actually high on the list of psychopathy. So there are traits that the antisocial personality disordered individual has that can be very beneficial. But what seems to be the kicker in many of the research articles that we've read and the books that have come out, actually, there's a phenomenal book by Kent Kale called The Psychopath Whisperer. If you ever get the chance to read it, it is a phenomenal book and explains quite a bit about psychopaths. But when you kind of look at the psychopathy in general, what seems to be the significant factor is the environment that they grow up in. Mm-hmm. So when they tend to grow up in environments that are either abusive or filled with a lot of negativity and neglect and so on and so forth, and not a lot of love, then that's where you might find that the individual with antisocial personality disorder might lean towards criminal behavior not social aspects of behaviors and so on and so forth, and really hurting other people. But when you are raised, even if you have psychopathic traits or antisocial personality disorder traits growing genetically, if you're raised in a loving environment, a nurturing environment, then you tend to move towards more socially acceptable professions and socially acceptable ways of behaving.
Wow, it's so interesting.
If that makes sense.
It does. Dr. Thurai with us. We've got lots of questions to get through. We've had messages asking, how is it different to being a narcissist? Jen wants to know, if you're born a psychopath, can you really help being an awful person? And Dee says, great topic. My boss is stone cold. Cannot connect with him at all. Any tips for navigating psychos in the workplace? Dee, very wisely, not giving a full name there. Joining us live on the line is clinical psychologist Dr. Thurai from the Human Relations Institute and Clinic. And we're talking about psychopathy, kind of getting to grips with it as a concept. It's, as we've touched on earlier, it's not a diagnosis as such. What it actually kind of relates to most closely is the antisocial personality disorder. We've had a number of messages asking for a bit of clarity on terms, but also about treatment and living and working with psychopaths. So, Dr. Thrower, I wanted to ask you, is there a reliable way to test for psychopathy? I read a book called The Psychopath Test by John Ronson years ago, which looked at something, I think it's called the Hare Test. It was like a 20-point checklist, which is really, really fascinating. But in a clinical setting, what would be done?
Well, usually what we look at are certain personality assessments that we would check for genetically. To be honest, I can't really speak to that because I don't know what the specific genetic markers are. But normally what we do is we look for any type of personality assessments, and we will definitely do an emotions test, which is to be able to identify different emotions based on different facial expressions.
Here's my kind of issue. Is someone going to come to a clinic and say, I think I'm a psychopath, I need you to test me so I can be better? No,
absolutely not. Okay. That's not what you're going to get. So usually, and this is why I'm saying that sometimes when you look at the statistics, they're quite high, because a lot of the psychopathy populations that are tested are usually the ones that are incarcerated. Mm-hmm. So that's where you're going to get a lot of individuals that will, or a lot of research studies with higher research statistics. But in essence, you're not really going to have a lot of individuals that will really just come in and be like, oh, by the way, I feel like I'm a psychopath, so can you check that out for me?
I really want to do some self-improvement. I want to work on myself and not be a psychopath. Like, yeah, right. But that's what I wanted to ask you. You know, can psychopaths be rehabilitated, and what can that look like in terms of techniques, medication even? Can you cure a psychopath?
Cure, I think, is a very difficult word. Mm. I mean, I don't think cure is the right word to use, so much that we can treat, we can make at least symptoms to be quite manageable. But the reality is that, like I said, for a lot of psychopaths, you'll have a smaller amygdala region. So essentially, it's not physiologically possible for them to have the levels of empathy as individuals who do not fall under that spectrum. So when we are trying to, quote unquote, cure, what we're trying to really do is help them manage their emotions so that they can live in a society in a way that doesn't disrupt themselves or people around them. So there are medications that can be helpful, but usually therapy along with medications, but it's more like social skills training.
To the text line we go, Dr. Thrower, because as you said, it's not just the person who, you know, might have been identified as a psychopath. It's those around them that might be impacted the most. Dee says, great topic. My boss is, and has written in capitals, stone cold. Cannot connect with him at all. Thought he'd be different out of work, but a friend sees the same socially too. Any tips for navigating psychos in the workplace? He frequently makes people cry and doesn't care a bit. Interesting. You talked earlier about the kind of the industries or jobs that psychopaths can be attracted to. We don't know what industry D and indeed his or her boss is in, but how can you, as an employee or a colleague, protect yourself, protect your energy, and navigate that kind of dynamic?
Well, I mean, without kind of using any labels for any individual, my number one thing when I work with any person who's an employee at a workplace, I always say the first thing that you want to do is make sure that you document and you report all incidences. Do not have conversations over the phone. Don't call them, don't WhatsApp them, email everything. And even if you do have a conversation over the phone, send an email and be like, as per our conversation, mm-hmm. blah, 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 blah. And the reason why that's so important is because everything becomes documented. So the gaslighting tendencies, the manipulation, the manipulative tactics become very difficult for the individual to implement. Also, you want to make sure to set extremely clear boundaries, be it through email or in person, maintain professionalism, and prioritize as much as you can that sense of self-care, because it is so difficult to deal with somebody, whether they are psychopathic or not, but it's extremely difficult to deal with somebody who's quite toxic in the work environment, especially when they have a higher authority than you, because it becomes very difficult to kind of also fear for your job and fear for your livelihood. So prioritize your self-care, but always make sure to document and report absolutely everything, and try to reach out to other colleagues and to friends whenever something happens. So make sure that your support system can be very beneficial for you. But more than anything, just don't engage.
Good my number one thing advice.
Yes, absolutely.
Lana says, how is it different from being a narcissist? We have touched on narcissism on the show before, but in a nutshell, what would you say those point of differences are?
Well, I mean, although they can be under the same cluster of personality disorders, really narcissism is very different. It's first of all, there is no physiological difference between narcissists and otherwise. And usually narcissists will do things for self-gain, whereas the psychopath doesn't really, they're just kind of existing. They don't understand a different way of existing other than that. So it's quite different. Their manipulation tactics are different. The sense of grandiosity, the sense of sensitivity to criticism is non-existent for a psychopath versus a narcissist. So they're completely different diagnoses.
Last question. Dev says, what does it mean if you love watching true crime and are a bit obsessed with famous murderers? This is my wife, not me. Should I sleep in the spare room tonight?
No, absolutely not. You don't have to. This is not how it works. You don't become a psychopath by watching like serial killers. But there have been quite a few, and I'm sure people have seen it, like TikTok videos or Instagram reels where they're talking about, oh, you could be psychopathic if you're watching serial killer movies at night. That's not how this works. So you want to stay away from what you see on TikTok and Instagram. And absolutely not. As a clinical psychologist, I will tell you that those two are not correlated.
Phew. Dev, tell your wife to go forth and enjoy some Netflix later on. It's a good day for it. Dr. Thryer, thank you so, so much for your time today. We had a message going. What was the book called? You mentioned a book earlier.
Oh, it's The Psychopath Whisperer. Phenomenal book.
Psychopath Whisperer. Very different to The Horse Whisperer. Not making a nice movie with Chris and Scott Thomas out of that one. Dr. Thryer, appreciate you as ever. You can find Dr. T in their new location, Human Relations Institute and Clinic in JLT. And thank you for downloading this episode of the Afternoons with Helen Farmer podcast. Don't forget, you can subscribe. You'll get direct to your phone as soon as it's out. And you can listen to me live on Dubai Eye 103.8, Monday to Friday between 2 and 5 p.m.
You've been listening to a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast. To enjoy lots more from Dubai Eye in the United Arab Emirates, just go to dubaieye1038.com or find them wherever you normally get your podcasts.